and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone, and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. If you liked our opening music, it's called Clarion Call by the Mark Arneson Band, and you can download that on any of your favorite music platforms. In addition, if you're new, Alzheimer Speaks is about sound information, not just sound bites. We like to have real conversations with people all around the world at all different levels, because I don't think we can make sustainable change without doing that. So maybe, just maybe, you can be our next guest. Please reach out to me at radio@alzheimerspeaks.com and we'll have a conversation. Before I introduce our guest, who I am just thrilled to have on, we are having one of the renowned singers from The Voice with us today. I want to do a couple of shout outs. One is to Alzheimer Speaks itself. We've updated our website. Please check out alzheimerspeaks.com. We have one whole section dedicated to free resources, from the radio show to dementia chats and dementia in the arts, dementia quick tips, how to start a memory cafe or dementia-friendly communities, the Purple Angel, and of course, we also have information on Dementia Map, a global resource directory, which features 150 different categories that you can search. Not only that, but there's a calendar of events. There is a glossary of terms, because believe me, you don't know what you don't know when this disease knocks on your door. And we also have some great blog entries there. So we would love you to participate. If you are a large organization, a small organization, or even a person that doesn't think that you are a resource, like a family member or a person living with dementia, many of you have blogs and YouTube channels and support groups. Those need to be listed so more people can find you. So go to dementiamap.com. And if you'd like a tour, I'd be more than glad to give you a personal tour of that. I also want to just announce, finally, the launch of Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care. This has been a keynote story of mine for years, and people have requested it be put into book form. You can now get either hard copy or soft copy through Amazon, Barnes and Noble. If you want an autographed copy, you can order one through our site, or you can go to Kirkhouse Publishing. No limit in terms of how to access us there. But the story of Betty the Bald Chicken is really about lessons in how to care. And it's a children's book, but I think the kids are going to teach us adults a lot of great lessons in the process. It allows people not only dealing with dementia, but if they're being bullied, or maybe they're going through a loss of a death or divorce, or there's so many situations in life where we don't feel like we fit in, Betty can help open up the conversation. So please check that out. We are going to hear from the Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner, and they're going to talk about the footbar walker, which I think everybody needs to know about. And then we'll be right back.
I love the footbar walker, and let me tell you why. It is the option for my toolbox that I've been waiting for. Let's be honest. There are some clients who, despite our best rehab efforts, just aren't able to return to performing a sit-to-stand transfer on their own. Now I can offer my caregivers an easier, safer option that doesn't involve hoisting their loved one up from a sitting position. I don't recommend this walker for all of my clients, but I do recommend this walker for those caregivers looking for an easier, safer option with transfers. I would also encourage other therapists to add this walker to their toolbox. It's kind of like having my own mobile parallel bars for the client to pull up on. Whether it's a family caregiver at home helping a loved one with Parkinson's or dementia, CNAs in a long-term care facility assisting their patients, or therapists adapting to client and caregiver-specific needs, we now have a very safe and effective option to offer in the Footbar Walker. Check this product out at thefootbarwalker.com. That's it for today from Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner. Have a great day, and don't forget, if you can't do it, adapt it.
Well, we are back, and it is time to introduce you to our guest. We're going to talk about the magic of music. We're going to talk about the journey of having a parent with Alzheimer's disease and advocacy and so much more. Today, I'm thrilled to have on the show Jay Allen. Now, if you're like me, you might not have known Jay unless you were watching The Voice. He's been a singer-songwriter for years, but again, I personally didn't know of his music until he sang a song that went viral called Blank Stares, which was written for his mother who had passed away from Alzheimer's. The song, like I said, went viral. It went to over 500 million views on Facebook, and it showcased Jay's talent and dedication to raising awareness for Alzheimer's disease. As a result of his advocacy efforts, he has been involved with several international events, including the Rita Hayworth Gala, which raised over $100 million for the Alzheimer's Association, and has received numerous accolades, including the Caregiver Award from the National Alzheimer's Association. Jay is set to hit the radio waves with his new music in 2023. He is also a friend of our good friend, Kevin Dill, who was recently on our show talking about his life and symptoms that he deals with living with Lewy body dementia and his advocacy story. Well, Jay, welcome to the show. I am so thrilled to have you on. I was so impressed watching you on The Voice. Your singing is absolutely magnificent. And to see what you've done with your journey, you know, through your mom's dementia has just been absolutely incredible. So first, I want to thank you for everything you've done, because it's really, truly amazing.
Thank you. It's very kind of you, Lori. Thank you.
If we can start out with maybe giving a little bit of background about your mom's story with dementia and how it affected you and others in your family. And of course, your mom.
So let's reel it all the way back. I've told this story so many times, but it always seems fresh and new every time I say it. And it always takes me right back to that first phone call from my father. I'd been in Nashville for quite a few years already, and I'm from a little town in Iowa. So dad called me from Iowa and he said, Jay, I feel like it's my obligation as your dad to let you know what happened this morning. Your mom has been going to the same place of work for years and years and years. She called me this morning because she had pulled over on the side of the road and she didn't know where she was going. She was bawling her eyes out. She said, please pick me up. And I said, man, I was just like, well, what happened? And he goes, I think she's been struggling with some, you know, form of dementia. I was like, wow. Okay. Well, it immediately clicked because, you know, we had noticed signs, you know, early on, but we really didn't take it seriously. We weren't really educated on what dementia or Alzheimer's was. So she was officially diagnosed with what's called early onset Alzheimer's when she was 51 years old. It took her life very quickly. It was 2 years and 9 months for us. So in a matter of, you know, less than 3 years, I saw my 50-year-old mother age what seemed like 30 years. It took her life from her. They call it the longest goodbye for a reason. It really is, you know, a farewell, you know, once, and then, you know, then you have to say it again when their physical body passes. So the next phone call, I'll never forget, my dad said, again, I feel like it's my obligation to make sure that you get time with your mother before this progresses any farther. We're about 6 months in. He made the trip from small town Iowa to Nashville. She was terrified to travel. He finally, you know, got her comfortable enough to get her in a car and drove 10 and a half hours to Nashville. I was the oldest child, and I was the only son. My mother raised me like I was not only the center of her world, but the center of the world. I was a very loved child, and I felt that from the very beginning. And so to have, you know, her walk in the door, and I hadn't seen her for a couple of years at this point, but putting the walk in the door of my home and expecting, you know, there's never going to be a person that looks at you like your mother looks at you, and to expect that look and to not receive it, just to see her look at me like, who am I? You know, like, who are you? You're a stranger. She looked directly through me like I was a ghost. It broke something inside of me, I'll be honest. It really devastated me. And, you know, we have the option where it's fight or flight. And I'm always fight. In that moment, I was flight. I told Dad, I said, I don't know what this is. We got to get out of here, man. Let's go dancing, whatever. So he got my mama dolled up. We took her to a well-known venue in Nashville and heard about the power of music my whole life. Never experienced it. I thought I had. I was a music director in mega churches. I thought I had experienced the power of music fully. I had not until this moment. We took her to a well-known venue called the Sutler in Nashville. I opened up the door. My mother took one step in and she saw the band on stage and she heard the music. And people that have dementia, especially when they're really far into it, they have a glossy look in their eyes. They're really not there with you. They're really not present, as you know. But when she saw that band, she heard that music, suddenly, like it was like the veil, the curtain was raised, and she had a sparkle in her eye. She wanted to go inside, and she was trying to talk, and she was so excited. And being the oldest, I've always been a fixer, so I took advantage of that moment. I grabbed her by the hand. I pulled her into the venue, right in front of the stage, in front of everyone. I started dancing with my mom. I knew I had her back for a second. I didn't know how, but I was going to take full advantage of that moment. And we started slow dancing to a fast song. And I just felt her really lean in and take a breath and grab me. She just whispered in my ear, oh, I've missed you, and I love you. I love you, Jay. And for a split second, I saw the mom that I always knew, and I felt her with me. And that quickly went away when we sat down. But that's what inspired me to write a song called Blank Stares. And it really was a positive thing for me. It was immediately like, gosh, my mother would have done anything for me. So I have the ability to share my voice and write songs. So what better way to try to help her than to write a song about it? And very quickly, it caught on. It was one of those things you can never plan. You can never predetermine. It was just God's will, I believe, that this song was supposed to be heard and not only help me and my family, but help a lot of people. So something that was the most devastating, saddest, most painful thing to me turned into a really, truly beautiful thing, and it gave me purpose to my life and my artistry. And, you know, I got to go on The Voice and share that. I thought we'd help, you know, be a part of raising $50 million to help fight against Alzheimer's, but we actually found out it was $100 million. And it's continued to be a passion for me, but then it led to the what's next. So I got to go on this show and hit the refresh button on my life and my career, you know, and I'm about to announce something really cool that just happened. And I'm about ready to get to show the kind of what's next, the kind of after the grieving part in my life. And I'm a dude that's actually very lighthearted and fun and life of the party. I'm covered in tattoos. I have a 5-piece band and we rock and roll, and it's a really fun show. Not a lot of people know that unless you come to my show. But the what's next and all the music that we're about to release is going to show that. And that was really what the next song, No Prayer Like Mama's, was. I released a song right after The Voice called No Present Like the Time, which was kind of, you know, for me, it was what I learned from losing someone. And that's take the phone call if mama or dad calls. Don't hold a grudge. You know, don't take for granted all the little things in life and all the relationships and opportunities we've been given, because you only really get one spin around this rock, as you know, and life is very fleeting and time is short. And then I had one last song I wanted to share about kind of getting through the grieving process and coming out strong. And that was No Prayer Like Mama's. And the concept was, I have a really deep faith, and I finally chose to truly believe that my mom did go to heaven and there was a purpose for her life. And she is still with me, even though that was really hard and really sad. And it will always be a painful memory for me. It's also a beautiful thing to believe that she's where she's supposed to be and she's home, and she can still think of me from heaven. She can still pray for me from heaven. She can still guide my life as my mother from heaven. So that's really what I wanted to say, and kind of almost put the nail in the coffin per se, to kind of like wrap that part of my life and my story, and but still continue on and to do great things. I'll always be an advocate. Every show that I play will probably be tied to giving back towards the cause. But it was really about the what's next, you know, and being thankful for that story and that part of my life.
Well, you know, it's interesting with your story. You talked about that first call from your dad about your mom getting lost. My mom did the same thing. I mean, and she, you know, she could get around anywhere, and then to just be that devastated and that, I don't know what to do. I don't know who to ask. I don't know. I mean, there was no way for her to get out of that spot. And then when you were talking about her being fearful of travel, there's so many things that people don't understand with this disease. And one of the things I'm going to just take the opportunity to bring up, it wasn't planned, but you know, with Bruce Willis, I know the family has asked for the paparazzi to just kind of leave us alone. And they don't understand that everybody goes through this disease on a real different journey. And noise and flashes and mobs of people can scare a lot of people. And, you know, if you really respect someone's journey, allow them to do like what you did, you know, watch those moments where you got up and you danced with your mom. Don't kill that moment. Don't take that away from the person. Don't take that away from the family, but allow those things to happen and focus stories on those moments of joy. I don't know about you, but you know, with my journey with my mom of 30 years, I didn't know there were so many levels of unconditional love. I didn't know how peaceful and small a moment of joy could be. You know, I kind of thought I felt that when I got married and then when I had a baby, but there's just so many levels of connection that, you know, we overlook in our fast paced lives, trying to get the big story or the big picture or looking, you know, keeping up with the Joneses type thing. With your mom, were there things for her that were difficult? Like you mentioned travel. Did she have trouble with noise or crowds or things like that? I mean, I saw her up on stage and I was like, good for you. And she was having a good time. And
yeah, that was a very conflicting choice because we were obviously aware that she would get overwhelmed easily in environments like that. So, but you know, I had gotten to a point where, okay, I was sharing this song on stages. We literally we'd open up for every country act there was. Travel the country, we put on these parties, and then at the end of my show I would share this story and sing this song, and sometimes a lot of the times it would connect, but there's other times where it just wouldn't. You know, people are rowdy and drinking and enjoying themselves, and the last thing they want to do is hear about sad story, even though there was a beautiful light at the end of the tunnel. So I thought, man, what better way I can talk Tom Blue in the face, but what better way to really impact people than to show them what this is and stop them in their tracks. So I had the conversation with my dad and I shared my idea with him and he was all in. I said, well, how about this? We'll put her side stage. You two will be side stage for my show. You watch the whole show. When I get towards the end of the concert, I'll look at you. You give me the nod. You let me know if you're okay or not. And I remember the first time we did this, I look over side stage and my mom is beaming, smiling, tapping her foot, bobbing her head. And my dad's like, yeah, she's good. So we pulled her out there and wrapped my arms around her and hers around mine, and everyone went dead silent. And at that moment, like I was definitely cautious for her and guarding her, but I was so thankful we made that choice to do that. And that's really where this story all began. You know, so, but yeah, there was some very, very tricky moments. There's one time where we did this and I got to the end of the show. We were opening up for Cole Swindell in I think it was like Dubuque, Iowa or something like that, in front of thousands of people. And we get towards the end of the show and I look side stage and my parents aren't there. I'm like, oh shoot. So I turn around, I look at my band. They're like, we don't know. I pull out my phone from thousands of people with my back turned. And I had all these texts and phone calls from my dad. He was at security and the buyer for the event had forgot to alert security to let my parents in. He didn't have a ticket. They wouldn't let him in. He couldn't prove that I was their son. So I get on the mic. And I go, hey, y'all. I shushed them. It was like 5,000 people. I shushed this whole crowd and said, at this point in the concert, I want to talk about my mama who's really sick. And she happens to be here. but she can't get to the stage because she's stuck at security right now. Can you do me a favor and part the Red Sea and let her walk down the middle? They did. They went dead quiet. Part of the whole crowd, security escorted her and my dad down front. And when I got, there were stairs that walked down from the stage right down to the ground. And when I saw her, she was a mess. I mean, she was terrified, so overwhelmed, like what we were talking about. But again, so glad I did it, because when I walked down and met her down on the end of those steps, she saw me and something clicked and she knew who I was for the first time in a while. And all that went away and another beautiful moment, you know? And so it's things that definitely, you know, when I talk to people about how do you navigate this, I feel like it's case by case. You definitely have to feel like your own scenario, and every person is wired differently and is going to respond differently and progress slower or quicker. So, you know, it's different for everyone. For us, it was definitely like we knew we had to do this. We felt obligated, you know, to share this story and to put it in the spotlight. Also, like, dang, it was, we also had to take care of Mama and take care of her heart. So it was tricky for sure.
Wow. And what a neat thing for the crowd to be able to be part of that, connecting the two of you. But it's just, it's so amazing, because sometimes you turn on the news and you think, is there any compassion left in this world at all? Are people going to work together to lift one another up? And there's moments like that, that, you know, should be played over and over and over again for people to go, look at us working together to make this moment. Because not only did you and your mom, you know, have that moment of connection, but everybody in the audience, I mean, I'm sitting here fighting back tears, just listening to the story of how powerful that is. And then also, you know, I think one of the things that dementia teaches you too is, you know, being spontaneous, like, what the heck do I do now? You know, you're flipping through your phone and it's like, okay, I'm going to make a call. Good, bad, or ugly, we're going for it. We're all in and we're going to see what happens, but I'm going to make the best judgment I can. And, you know, we all try to control things up one side and down the other. And bottom line, we can't. And we have to have faith in terms of what we're doing. And I don't think there's anything more powerful than sharing personal stories, you know, to get people connected. I mean, that's why I started Alzheimer's Speaks. My mom has been gone since 2014, and I started this in 2009, but, you know, had lived with the disease for 30 years. And back then there wasn't much for resources at all. If you walked out of the doctor's office, even with the phone number to the Alzheimer's Association, you were really lucky. And some people are still experiencing that today. You know, we've got to have more resources and tools and products to support us. And I think one of the most powerful, again, is personal story. So you don't have to be a J to share your story. Every story has value and it can impact others. So don't be shy about that, because we're also, you know, if we don't put a spotlight on this, we're never, ever going to get the services, products, and tools and resources we need. So it's very, very important to do that. So how cool is that? When you were talking about the power of music too, I'm going to give just a plug for a film that was made called, it was originally called His Neighbor Phil. It's now called A Timeless Love. And that show kind of depicts that music connection. It shows how all the different family members kind of come together in their own way, trying to help. And sometimes there's, you know, the siblings will squabble and the different people in the family because they're on different pages and stuff like that. But those, you know, that connection of music is so powerful. And, you know, what you do for a living, I think so many of us take for granted what that does for us on a daily basis, because we always have the radio on, or, you know, we're listening to tunes, but we don't really consciously process how it affects us emotionally, you know, how a song can trigger happiness and joy or sadness or whatever. And so I think that that is a real important piece of this too. This isn't, power of music isn't just for somebody with dementia, you know, it's for all of us. And to share your story of your journey through these different songs, I think is absolutely fantastic. In fact, you know, I'd like to play the song No Prayer Like Mama's, and then we'll come back and talk about that. Okay? Yeah.
Ain't no prayer like like mama's when it's your turn up to bed. And she knows it's only little league, but she knows you want it bad. And when you get a little older and you're out a little late, she'll bend God's ear all night long till you get back home safe. All those hallelujah amens, crying on her knees, saying grace at dinner time and telling God her dreams. She's an angel, she's a saint. I'm telling y'all there ain't no prayer like mama's. Ain't no prayer like mama's. When it's a prayer for the girl that'll make a baby happy, that's gonna be his whole world. She'll know the Lord was listening, cause she can't help but smile when she sees that answered prayer walking down the aisle. All those hallelujah amens, crying on her knees, saying grace at dinner time and telling God her dreams. She's an angel, she's a saint. I'm telling y'all there ain't no prayer like mama's. Ain't no prayer like mama's when she walks the streets of gold, still praying for her babies, kneeling at his throne. I know she's looking down, and I know she's all healed now. But she's singing out amazing grace, and oh, how sweet the sound of those hallelujah amens, crying on her knees, saying grace at dinner time and telling God her dreams. She's an angel, she's a saint. I'm telling y'all there ain't no prayer like mama. She's watching over us. I'm telling y'all, there's just no prayer like mama's.
So, Jay, that song, No Prayer Like Mama's, is really powerful. Can you, I know you had mentioned earlier, you know, it kind of came to you towards the end of your healing journey. And I think we're always going to be healing through this process, but it was one more step. How did that come to you? Does stuff just come, or like I get stuff in dreams and then I know like, don't go to bed because you're not going to sleep because it's going to spin in your head till you write it down? Or, you know, does it channel to you, or do you have to really work at it?
Yeah. So, when I first went to Nashville, I'd signed a publishing deal, and I signed a couple publishing deals since. And basically you sign on with the company and they book your writing sessions, and you're kind of in a way forced to write and to create ideas every day, which turned me into a songwriter. And I'm thankful for that. You know, it massaged a skill that I had and it helped me hone a craft. But now I've gotten to a point where I have decided to only sit down and invest in a moment to write a song when I am moved to do so, when I feel like and laid upon my heart and I have, there's nothing stopping me. I have to get it out. And that happened with No Prayer Like Mama's. Kylie, my wife, Kylie Morgan, she actually had made friends with this guy named Justin Morgan. He's actually a Christian songwriter in Nashville. And last several years I've written with guys that specifically, have experience with writing country music. I'd never really spent the time with Christian songwriters, which is really where my foundation lies, you know, is in my faith. So I started writing with guys like that, and I took this write with Justin Morgan, and he goes, Jay, I'm sure you get pitched ideas to write mom songs all the time. And I said, yeah. He goes, well, how about we just write about your healing process today? You know, I feel like you've gotten to a good place with being on The Voice, and you're kind of telling, you know, you're telling the what's next, like how you've gotten through the grieving process and coming out alive and strong, better. And I was like, yeah, there's no prayer like mama's. Still praying for me from heaven. That's how I get through. And he was like, that's it. He goes, no prayer like mama's. And so we just started writing kind of the sequence, you know, for me, you know, I envision, we just shot a music video for this song and I cannot wait to share it. It is one of the most emotional experiences of my life to shoot and film this music video. But we shot it in sequence where, you know, it starts with a mother's love is really, you know, when she has a child, she can't help it. It's ingrained in her. She is forever thinking about and praying for her child and taking care of her child. You know, so for me, I envision like T-ball or whatever sport your young child is in. You know, the mother is cheering her child on, praying for him to do well, like the biggest cheerleader. And then it's like, gets a little older. Mama's the one waiting at home, waiting for that phone call, like, where's my son, you know? And then, you know, praying him home almost every night, you know, which are the moments for me, I know as a young man, I took for granted knowing that I had a mother at home waiting for me, which is such a beautiful thing. And then for me, the next verse was, I just got married, you know, and I remember breakups, you know, when I was a child, and I thought they were, you know, as a teenager, I thought it was like the end of the world. And even though my mother was older and mature and knew it wasn't the end of the world, she held my hand all the way through those moments. And she prayed me through those moments. And she told me, one day you're going to find your wife. She truly believed in it. And she prayed for that person, that God would bring me that life partner, because life is so much bigger than yourself. It's sharing your life with someone. And, you know, for a lot of people. And so that was, you know, I just recently got married to Kylie, and I've, you know, it was like, I wanted to almost in my mind envision that my mother was there that day. And then the last verse was, you know, I truly believe in my heart of hearts. It took me a long time to actually truly believe this. I believe that my mother entered through the gates of heaven and she found her forever home. And she's still thinking of me from heaven. She still has, in a way, is guiding me through my life, especially the story that we've shared. There has become a foundation for me, giving me purpose. And so it was a story of understanding what the role of a mother or even a father is, and going through a life with them, looking back and reflecting on how much they loved you and respecting that. And then also, if you've experienced the loss of a parent, to be like, hey, you know, it's okay to truly move on, you know, and even though you're always going to grieve and miss them and look forward to seeing them again, it's okay to move on and be better from that experience of loss. And so that's really what No Prayer Like Mama's is. And it was surprisingly very easy to write. It came out in a couple hours. We tracked it that day. You know, it was like, man, if it was that easy to write, it must be true. You know, so I did a really soft release on it, but I'm going to do a big music video release on, and I think the video is going to be the thing that really shows the power behind this song. So I'm excited to share.
Well, and what's so cool too is the song is much bigger than just dementia, you know. And I always say, what's good for dementia is good for all the world. I mean, there's so many lessons that are wrapped into it, and that grieving process can be really, really, really tough. I have a thing. When I do speaking, I call tears, fears, and joy. And I always ask my audience, what do you want in life? And of course, everybody wants joy. So, well, let's look back and kind of analyze these things. And, you know, the tears are about the grief. And, you know, you can really spin yourself down the hole really quickly. I mean, grief can just overcome you, and everybody processes it differently, as you well know. I'm sure you saw that even within your own family. Everybody processing the grief and the loss of your mom multiple times through this disease, because you don't just lose them, you know, that one time. But one of the things that came to me was that you can't have great grief without first having great love. And that's what your story is all about, this great love, this connection, this unconditional love of, no matter where you are out there at night, I want you still home safe with me, you know, and all of those stages of life of just having that is somebody who believes in you, somebody who loves you, somebody who, you know, has your back. And sad to say, not, like you said, not everybody in the world has that, but I think it can also give hope to those that don't have that it's possible, you know, again, by sharing that story. And I think it also, that story hopefully will help others just appreciate what they have today, you know, before they lose something as well. And I just think that is so important. One question I did want to ask you because a lot of people ask this question when one person in the family has dementia. Were there others in, you know, relatives and family members that had dementia that you're aware of?
Yeah. So, you know, once this happened to us, I took myself to school. I educated myself as possible. You know, you read every article, like, you know, I partnered with the National Alzheimer's Association and started doing several events with them, just listening to all the speakers at the galas. And I did everything I could to educate myself. And I, you know, that was one of my first questions, you know, who in the history of our family? Well, and looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like it was the oldest female in every generation of our family, you know? So not every, I don't think every family has a sequence like that, but for ours, and it's really interesting. And obviously a scary thing for, cause I have two little sisters. So the oldest sister, which would be the middle child, she is terrified that she's next, you know? And it's pretty obvious that if any of us are going to, you know, get this disease, it's going to be her. So we do everything in our power to support her and to love her. And she does everything in her power to live a very healthy, social, brain engaging life, you know? So, it's, you know, and I think when a lot of people actually sit down and do the research, they find out it's probably been in their lineage one way or another, you know? So, but it's different for everyone.
Yeah. And maybe called different things. I remember when I was 13 and went with my mom and my brother to visit my great aunt in the nursing home. And at that time they called them senile, you know, and she had lost her mind. Those were the terms that were used. And I'll never forget the day that we went and she remembered my mom and my brother, and she didn't remember me. I was crushed. Because, and I was so mad. It was like, why is she remembering him? We have to drag him here. He doesn't even want to come. He really didn't have a relationship with my great aunt. And I remember kind of screaming at God, I don't ever want anyone else to feel this pain. When I look back at my life, those little moments that you get past, but then you look back and go, wow, the dots are really connected here in a lot of ways. I know I get the question all the time, are you going to take, you know, genetic testing to find out? And I have chosen not to. One, because, and again, you know, I'm sure your sister has heard this a zillion times, your genes aren't your destiny. There's a lot of people with those genes that, you know, it doesn't progress. And stress kicks those symptoms up. So, and it's hard, it would be hard not to think about that. So, you know, enjoy your life for what you have today and, you know, live as healthy as you can. And, you know, you can just do your best. And I love that you said, you know, the family is supporting her, you know, in this journey, because there are so many families out there that, you know, it's never been documented, but they say, oh, we've had a ton of people in our family. Some of them have large families and, you know, 9 out of 11 will have it. And it's not hit and miss. I mean, you don't know. There's so much we don't know about this disease yet and the true cause of it. I want to just mention to people, if you're just bopping in listening to the show now, we are talking with Jay Allen, and he's been talking about his journey with his mother, who is living with early onset, and the impact that that's had on his life and his family's life. I would really recommend you go to his website, jayallenofficial.com. And we're going to continue talking about his advocacy. I mean, he's helped raise $100 million. This is just phenomenal in terms of his work, but music is so powerful. So please, you know, support him. He's doing great, great things. So, Jay, let's talk a little bit more about your advocacy. How did you get hooked up with the Alzheimer's Association, and were they the first ones that you kind of worked with?
Yeah, so it's one of those things that cannot be predetermined or planned, I believe. If anyone had a plan, it was, I mean, our God in heaven just, you know, he had a design for my life. And what happened was I wrote this song, Blank Stairs, it was for two reasons. It was immediately like, how do I go to war against this disease? By my mom, let's write a song. And then it became a session of therapy for me, to be honest, to write this song. But I was signed to Sony at the time, and we wrote this on Music Row. And when you're signed to a publishing company, when you write a song, you have to turn it into your publisher. So I it was really a song for me, but I turned it in. I'll never forget another phone call. It was from the head of Sony at the time. And he said, Jay, I'm sitting in my office on Music Row with a couple of hit songwriters, and I, for some reason, decided to click on this song called Blank Stairs. And I'm a blubbering mess in my office right now. He said, you don't know this, but I lost my father from Alzheimer's. I was his caregiver for the last 5 years of his life. I know what this song is about. He goes, if you can make a promise with me that we're going to give the proceeds back towards the cause, I would love to get this in the hands of some very important people. So before I knew it, Blank Stairs was playing all over Sirius XM radio. The head event coordinator for the National Alzheimer's Association in San Jose was putting on a big gala there and reached out to us and invited me to come with my band and perform. I didn't know what a celebrity gala was back then. I called it a gala even. Mm-hmm. But we showed up. I mean, you know, I'm dressed in like skinny jeans with holes in them and my tattoos all hanging out. And I'm standing in the back of this really beautiful room and everyone's in suit and ties and wearing cocktail dresses. And I was like, man, what is this? And then Kimberly Paisley, Brad Paisley's wife, got on stage and I watched her introduce me and invite me to come up. And I was like, oh, I mean, I wasn't even prepped. I had no idea what was happening. I went in blind. And so we walked on stage and, you know, people out, you know, in the crowd, it was like the VP of all of Amazon wide. I looked down and Mr. Garth Brooks was sitting in the crowd looking right at me. I'm just like, what the heck? I'm a normal dude. So, and this happened very quickly. So I just got up there and did what I came there to do. And I honestly told this story. We sang the song and it was the first time I had perform this song in this setting. And I did it through tears. And at the end of that song, it didn't matter. My experience was it didn't matter who in that room was super successful, how much money they had, how famous they were. At the end of that moment, we all had a common ground that was that we were losing someone to this disease or had experienced that loss. And we all just stood and cried and clapped and hugged each other. And that's really where it began. It just kind of spiderwebbed and escalated after that. Just ABC World Nightly News caught on. They aired the story. People TV had me out to New York to have me on. People Magazine started sharing articles. I started getting phone calls from chapters all around the country. The song went number one on iTunes in Australia. And it just was like, oh my gosh, like, here we go. And I said yes to everything. And I really didn't lift up my head for a long time. And again, you know, like a beautiful thing happened, but also lost myself a little bit, never, and didn't have the time to grieve. And my biggest regret is I didn't just go home and spend time with my mom. You know, I went to war. You know what? At the end of the day, there are no regrets. Even though it's, you know, it feels like a regret, I know it was meant to be and it was my destiny. And it's just turned into a way of life for me. The Alzheimer's Association, I look at them as a partner now. You know, I've become very good friends with them. And the head event coordinator for all the National Alzheimer's Association, she oversees a lot of event coordinating and PR. Her name is Jen Worth. And now that, you know, I'm about to announce something really cool that happened after coming off The Voice, and I have the opportunity to now take a song to country radio and to be on terrestrial country radio. And we're starting the conversations with them now where how can I, you know, I'm furthering my career as an artist and now showing like the other elements of me and telling other parts of my story. But how can we continue to bring awareness to this and even a bigger light? You know, every time I get on an interview when I'm visiting a country radio station, I'm going to talk about this. So how can you share that in not a forceful way, but in a kind way, and to show other people that this is a real thing and it's okay to talk about your loss and it's okay to turn it into something very life-changing, beautiful and empowering. So, yeah, we love them.
Well, that's neat. And I think, you know, even though you have some regrets of not going home, doing what you did, and I can say this pretty confidently, I still personally believe that you and your mom are greatly connected. You know, like when my mom was getting ready to pass, and this might sound really strange, she started coming to me in dreams. And so one night about 2 a.m, she's like, "Hey, I'm not sticking around a lot longer. You better finish up that obit." And so I was like, "Okay, I'm at the computer. I'm working on her stuff." And then she came to me, you know, because she wasn't able to talk towards the end. She came to me in another dream and said, "You're not going to be here when I go." And I was like devastated, because like, I'm always that person that helps people transition. I mean, that was, I've just done that for a lot of people. And I couldn't imagine not being there for my mom. And wouldn't you know, I have 2 keynotes when she is actively dying and I have to leave her. And what she told me though was, "Lori, I need to know you're going to continue doing what you're doing. This was important work we did together when I was here, and I need to know you're going to continue that." And then she was always a really big advocate about people dealing with death. And she says, "And the rest of the family needs to be part of the dying process. And if you're there, you'll just kind of take over and you'll do it and they'll let you." And so, you know, in her dying wish, here I am in Arizona with 2 keynotes. I go on stage, and I had called my mom right before thinking, you know, just to kind of check in, and the room is packed. And I go to get on stage, and I actually tripped up the step. I didn't fall, but I just tripped. And when I looked up, the whole room was bright white lights, like orbs everywhere. And at that moment, I didn't know if she died or if she arrived. And then I did my keynote and I called back to see how she was doing. And my daughter said, "Mom, it was the weirdest thing." I said, "What?" She said, "When you hung up the phone to say you were going to go speak, Grandma got so hot and so red and we couldn't cool her down. We did everything you told us to do." And she said, "But she started cooling down about 10 minutes before you called." And I said, "That's when I got off the stage." I think there is just such a strong connection there that we don't always know. And even once she passed, our whole family got the music, the happy song by Pharrell Williams. And it was kind of past its peak, but everyone was sending this to our family. It was just really weird. So after, you know, I come home, we bury my mom, do her funeral, the whole nine yards, and I'm exhausted. I'm trying to get some sleep. And it is like the band is set up in my bedroom, playing loud, loud, loud. I get no sleep the first night. I get no sleep the second night. The third night I go to bed, I'm like, "Mom, I understand your message. I have to figure out what makes me happy, but I got to get some sleep." And so it was almost like they were playing in a room next door, and like twice she like peeked in and it got really loud, you know, but I think our connections are so strong and there, and I think your mom is always going to be with you and always so proud of, you know, my gosh, what you've accomplished in such a short period of time in terms of bringing not only awareness and raising funds, but bringing comfort and, it, you know, exposing the disease for what it is, and that you can still have these strong connections. You can appreciate your life and all it's been. You know, none of our lives are perfect, but it seems like when dementia hits and knocks on the door, we expect it to be. And we have to adjust just like we do with everything else. So I think that's amazing. I don't know if you've ever heard of a man called Vince Zangaro. He does the Alzheimer's Music Fest. His dad lived with dementia, and he's a musician down in, I think he's in Georgia, and he does it in a couple of different states. And I was lucky enough to go to one of his fundraisers, and they do fundraising for caregiver support, which is really pretty cool. But, you know, it would be nice if we had a We Are the World type movement going for dementia as a whole to really get the support and stuff out there. So, you know, I just find this fascinating what your music has been able to do. Is there anything else that you want to share with us about your advocacy, your life, your music? I know you've got some stuff on the brink, but you can't really tell us either. And I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm excited to share the what's next until the other parts of the story. I've been so heavily invested in this cause. If you come to my live show, I think a lot of people expect something and get something else. Mm-hmm. We have a 5-piece band. We're all, young guys covered in tattoos, and it's very high energy, very fun, very rock and roll, lots of covers, lots of up tempos. And I'm excited to share those types of songs and share that side of me while also still to be an advocate for this disease. So I think there's a way to do both. I think what I'm about to share very soon and going to country radio this year is going to allow that. I would love to do things that aren't. So everything that I've done has been musically based. I would love to start, get to go do keynotes and be a speaker. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of intrigued by that. And just to have conversations like this with an audience. And if you know anyone that's looking for a speaker, want to do something together, let me know. So I'm very interested in starting to do things like that are outside of music as well. So.
Wonderful. There'll be a lot of people that pick up on that. Let me tell you. And I think, to me, one of the important things and in speaking, and I know that there's a lot of speakers that will go against this, but and you've done this so well with your music, be your authentic self. Don't let anybody steer you. How I speak, I call it emotional-based training. I want people to laugh and cry. I want them to feel the story. Because I think that's the only way that we change the path is when people really buy in. And I think what you shared with us today was absolutely beautiful and very meaningful and will give a lot of people comfort. And in knowing too that none of us have all the answers, none of us ever will, because every person with dementia is a little bit different. Every family, all our circumstances are different. And so being more open-minded in terms of what this can look like and how it can play out. Because there is, on the downside of this disease, there are people that really judge. And for some people that speak up, even living with dementia, they're bullied and they're told, well, you can't have it because you don't act like my mom or my dad or my wife or my husband. And, it's all different. It's all different. And I think it makes us better people in terms of accepting our differences and not judging. And you do a beautiful job speaking. So I don't think you'll have any problems opening that door if that's the route you'd like to go, for sure. So again, thank you for your time with us today. We can't wait to see the what's next in the video when it rolls out and all you have going on. In wrapping up with our conversation here with Jay Allen, it's just, this is a tough subject, but it's been really uplifting. You've filled my heart, and I know that you have others out there that are listening. And I'd like to ask our audience to please like, click, and share this episode, not for Alzheimer's Speaks, but for all the people that need this information. That's why Alzheimer's Speaks was created. It was about connecting people to hope. So be a hope giver. I think they'll find a lot of hope in this episode. And it only takes a few seconds of your time to make a difference in someone else's life, someone who you might be really close to that hasn't disclosed to you yet what they're going through. That happens a lot out there. So spread the love, spread the knowledge, and go to Jay's website. It's jayallenofficial.com. He has a tour schedule out there. I looked to see if you're in Minnesota, but you're not there. You're not there yet, I don't think.
I have up, I think it's the end of July, Spicer, Minnesota.
Oh, okay. I missed that. Wonderful. Well, I'll see if I can make that. That would be fun. And then you're on TikTok and Instagram as Jay Allen Music and also Facebook. Kudos to you. It's consistent. So many times people don't have consistent handles out there. And then you've got your YouTube channel, which is Jay Allen Official. And we're also going to connect you to the blind audition of A Blank Stare too, because that is so powerful. But he has other songs out there as well. So again, Jay, thank you so much for, you know, sharing your life with us and just being such a wonderful, kind person to make a difference in so many people's lives.
Thank you, Laura. You are an absolute sweetheart. Love what you're doing and your passion and the way that you convey that to so many people. So thank you for having me.
Thank you. And hopefully I'll see you in July. Okay. Okay. For our listeners, again, thank you so much. Don't forget to check out alzheimerspeaks.com. Look at our new book, Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care. It's a children's book. And I think the kids are going to teach us adults a lot of beautiful lessons in how to care. Plus, we've got all those free resources that are easy for you to access as well. Until next time, have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey, everybody. Jared Sylvester here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.